Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. School days are here again. School's beginning in a lot of different educational institutions in the U.S. and around the world. We're going to take a look at education today, some of the education headlines, and also see exactly what type of education is needed to solve so many of the problems that we see in our headlines today. We'll take a look at that topic and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And any emails you have you'd like to send in, please send those to comments at kpcg.fm. We always like reading those. Dwight Falk, Grant Turchin here today. And for a lot of people in the United States, and maybe around the world, it kind of depends, I guess, on the school seasons, school is starting back up. And last night we had our orientation for the Imperial Academy, which is the K through 12 school here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. The college starts next week. And so the kids are all excited to head back to school, as far as I know.
As far as I know, it didn't seem like there are too many people afraid of it, which is how I always felt going into public school. I think there is a big difference there where they know they're not going to get beat up the next day.
hopefully that doesn't happen. No, that is true. There's a lot of different pressures that students face when they go to school. We're going to take a look at a couple of headlines from today about some of the things going on with just different schools in the U.S., and then we're going to get into this really great book that's free at thetrumpet.com, Education with Vision, and look at some of the things in there, and we've got some related articles to that. And so I think it's going to be really an interesting program. Full disclosure, Grant, your father is the principal of Imperial Academy. And so you were in attendance because you also teach there at the school. I was in attendance because my kids go to school there. So we had the orientation lecture last night. And your dad did sort of a similar thing where he was looking at some of the things going on in the different schools in the world. And there is some really... really bizarre things happening in education today, and he highlighted a few of them. And you almost think I thought he was kidding at first, but I think they were actual stories that he was going through.
Right. They were so ridiculous. He was talking about just some things that have happened in public schools, what these kids are being taught in class. This is not what they're doing on their own time. In class, they're learning about Timmy's two mommies and a red crayon that can identify as a blue crayon if it feels like it. That's just... high-level indoctrination, just starting at the earliest ages. I believe he said first grade for one of those different courses that is being taught in public schools. They're just, at the very start, they're teaching moral relativism and just a complete lack of actual morals.
It's unbelievable. Can you imagine being an art teacher? uses the red crayon. Well, I don't think it's red.
It just depends on what I feel like this one is.
Well, really, if you break things down like that, it's hard to teach anything. Because if it's just, well, how you feel about it, then what's right, what's wrong? Is 2 plus 2 4 or is it 6? I mean, what is it?
Yeah, it's a confusing way of life. I thought he really had a really encouraging message after bringing out some of those examples. He gave the theme for Imperial Academy this year. It's 10th year, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's hard to believe it's been that long. I was a student for the first 3 years.
You used to rule that school.
That's right. I was a king. But yeah, it's very different from what it was back then. They've made a lot of advancements over the years. And so the theme was God's higher education, the plain truth.
Mm-hmm.
Play on words with the talking about flying and planes and like swans in flight, which we have a sculpture out here.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of He enjoys plays on words much like you do.
Right.
I told him about that article afterward about people who enjoy puns being brain damaged.
Right.
And we were all offended. Just driving home, just grievously offended by that article.
Yeah, it was. I do like plays on words, so I didn't appreciate that write up. We talked about that the other day. A couple of headlines here related to education here in the U.S., and I think this just kind of highlights some of the confusion that might be out there in some schools. This is from Yahoo. High school student cited for dress code violation for wearing a crew neck t-shirt. Students in Dickson County, Tennessee are missing class thanks to a dress code violation, and they aren't happy about it. Some students apparently were wearing the wrong type of crew neck t-shirt, and it's sort of an interesting story. What really happened here is the student, it's a senior girl. She then took pictures of it and went to Twitter and said, "What's wrong with this? Why can't I wear this?" And it does seem like maybe the school district needs to be a little more clear on some of those things. But what was interesting to me about it was that the students right away are protesting on social media and they don't want to follow the rules. I mean, even if you don't like the rule, that's part of life. It's learning to follow the rules. And they're just speaking out because they don't like the dress code.
Wow. That's just a really sad example of what my father was talking about even last night with, I believe he quoted Mr. Herbert Armstrong and said, how brat children are overrunning these college campuses. Obviously, this isn't a college campus, but even still, they think they have control of what goes on at these schools. They're not in charge. They're not the teachers. They're not the administrators. But in a lot of cases, they're meant to feel like they can do whatever they want. And if they don't get their way, they can throw a fit about it and somehow get their way from that.
Yeah, I think that's what they're learning. They're learning to rebel because they don't like it. Now, and again, you could get into an argument of whether it's a good rule or not a good rule, but that's not the point. The point is it's the rule. So, you know, try to follow it. One other student at the school tweeted, "Welcome to the particular high school where they want you to dress like you live in the 1600s because collarbones and kneecaps are too much." So they're all jumping on the social media and mocking the school's policies. And I just thought the same thing you did. It's like, well, how can students learn anything when they're spending so much time complaining about the rules they don't like? We all have rules we don't like in life. Isn't that life, right? I wish I didn't have to pay interest on my mortgage, okay, but I have to. I could protest it or I could pay it, you know? And so I think that's the point that they're not learning. I think one of the most invaluable things you learn in school, hopefully, is to follow some rules, even if you don't like them. That's more valuable than complaining because you don't like the dress code.
Yeah, and speaking of a dress code, what is so bad about covering up? We've even heard of guys complaining that the girls are not wearing enough clothes at school. This is a much better situation where at least everyone's able to focus on what they're learning instead of people walking around half naked.
There's a couple other examples they bring out in this article. And the slant of the article is sort of taking a shot at the schools. They give two other examples. I don't think it's the same school, but somewhere in the area where one school will not allow hair extensions. And so they're suing over that. They say that's racist to not allow hair extensions. So they're going to court over that. And then a boy was suspended from school for dyeing his hair pink. And so there was an outrage about that. And the article finishes by saying, whether it's pink hair or gasp, they write, a crew neck tee, these dress code clashes end up doing one thing, taking precious time away from students learning in the classroom. Yeah, but that's not what's taking away from them learning in the classroom. It's not the dress code. It's their failure to follow it and then the rebellion when they get disciplined. That's the problem. It's not the dress code. They have a completely wrong take on in the article.
That's exactly right. We hear that all the time when it comes to law. People blame the law and they try to relax the law. You hear that in criminal justice departments. Oh, we need to relax these different laws because we're capturing too many people breaking the law. Mm-hmm. So let's just change the law itself. That's not how it should ever work. If there's a law in place, why not just obey it and be happy? Because that's what comes from obeying law.
And they're not bad laws. I mean, they're not like, hey, you know, before going to class, you have to run 5 miles every day. You know, I mean, they're just telling you, hey, don't draw so much weird attention to yourself.
Right. And at Imperial Academy, there is also a dress code. You wear a white polo shirt and blue pants or a blue skirt for the girls. And It's the same thing where you don't show off your collarbone and kneecaps. I don't think anyone is outraged by that over there. Sometimes people come into class wearing a hoodie. They're told to take it off, and they take it off, and that's it. It's not. It does not cause people to picket outside the front of the school. It's just a matter of the law being in place. If the authority is administered in love, then I think a lot of people, a lot of those young people especially, really do appreciate it.
Yeah, you can get to focusing on what you're trying to study that day. I went to public school. We didn't have a dress code other than, I mean, I guess if somebody was really crazy, you know, there was a, you had to wear clothes. I guess maybe that was the extent of it. But, you know, and it did put people in sort of the have and have nots category, to where the people that could afford it, they had the nice clothes and they liked to wear it. Those that couldn't struggled, and it kind of set everybody. You know, that was maybe one of the big focuses. I know for me it was like, do I have the clothes I want for school this year? Like, that was a focus. And so for me personally, you know, I wouldn't have minded back in the day having a dress code, because then you don't have to worry about it and you can just get on with school and stop staring at everybody's, you know, fancy pants.
Exactly. That's a big thing with teenagers. It's all about trying to be popular, to have the latest style. And sometimes whenever you just have a dress code, you get rid of all of those other concerns.
Well, there's all kinds of dress codes in life. You know, I mean, sometimes at your employment, you have a dress code. If you go into a particular event, you know, I don't know if they still do this, but it used to say on gas stations, like, no shirt, no shoes, no service. I'm assuming that's still applicable. And that's the point. You have to learn to follow rules in life. And but I think a lot of these students are being taught to not follow the rules. And then once they do get up into the colleges, you have what we see happening at some of these schools, where there's protest and riot because they don't like something, instead of just maybe following the rules.
You know what really goes around comes around. That's what they always say. And how about whenever they get older and they start a school or some other institution, they put some rules in place, and every time someone clashes with those rules, they throw a fit and they try to get the rules changed. I don't think those kids are going to like that down the road if it ever comes back to them.
Yeah, it's a good point. And that's the problem with, say, sort of putting the highest level of, I guess, attention on people being able to express themselves. Because at some point, somebody's going to express themselves in a way that you don't personally like. And then what do? You know, mm-hmm. you have a battle royal over it. Like, you know, everyone's different. So those rules keep everything in line. And in some cases, they don't want to follow them. One other story here before we get into this Education with Vision booklet is from campusreform.org. This is an actual class that's happening. Fat studies course deems weightism a social justice issue. So that's a new, I've not heard of that before, weightism.
Wow.
So that's a study about people being persecuted for being overweight. That's a 3-credit course you can take at one of the major universities.
Really? That's incredible to even think about. Once again, though, that's just another example of, I think, some things that we have speculated would be the new social justice cause. And we're always joking about it. I think not too long ago we were joking off the air about ageism becoming a thing.
Right.
You know what? That popped up in the headlines a couple of months after we said it. And now weightism, it just never ends. There's a reason for anyone to be offended. And where does offense come from? It comes from breaking law. That's what the Bible says.
Yeah, this is called Fat Studies. It's returning to this particular university out on the West Coast next spring. Students will be able to earn 3 credits to explore forms of activism used to counter weightism perpetuated throughout various societal institutions. I don't know. You know, again, you feel bad when somebody's struggling with something like that. It is a real struggle for some people, and that's not really the point. But to have a whole course about it, like, what is it going to solve? That would be my question. What's the point of that? You have to pay for that course. And when you get done, now you're equipped to do what? I don't know. I'm not sure. Complain, I guess?
Complain professionally, apparently. You would think that we're in some sort of oppressive country like North Korea when you see things like this. We're not trying to make everyone be exactly the same and get rid of all individualism in this country, but there are certain rules and guidelines for different situations. People act like there should never be any sort of structure in school or work, whatever it may be. What if you're playing a soccer game? I actually experienced this in public school when I was younger. You're playing a soccer game and one kid just picks up the ball and runs off with it. how does that make the rest of the soccer game go? I think it actually was quite disruptive. It wasted our entire recess during school. There has to be rules. There's right. rules in sports games. There's rules in every aspect of society. And if you just keep on trying to tear them down, we have nothing left.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you can see through the some of these stories just about what's happening in some of the high schools. Of course, like was mentioned at the orientation at Imperial Academy last night, some of the things happening even in grade schools already, all the way up into college. What comes of it when it's all said and done? There's a really good booklet. It's free. All the literature is free at thetrumpet.com. You can read it right there. You can order your own copy. It's called Education with Vision, which is the motto of Herbert W. Armstrong College. We're broadcasting from that campus of the school. And so it's a free booklet at thetrumpet.com. You should get it if you haven't gotten it. It's really, really interesting. And it's not a long booklet, but it goes through what you see happening in education today, but then also has a really inspiring conclusion. Because education's a great, great thing. You know, you don't want to – I wouldn't want listeners to think, you know, oh, they don't like education. That's not the case at all. But it's just a lot of things are being called education today. But yet there's not a lot of value to them, and I guess that's the negative side of the coin.
Right. We're against fake education, right. Education that has no value, that teaches you maybe how to make a little bit of money after you eventually pay off your student debts 40 years from now, but it doesn't teach you how to actually live as an upstanding human being. That's not the right kind of education. It doesn't really have lasting value.
So this is a great booklet. It kind of explains the whole education field, I guess, but it does from a biblical perspective. The first chapter of the book talks about the origin of modern education, and it's interesting because there's a lot of things that we just encounter day to day, and I don't think often stop to think about where it came from, like what's the actual origin of some of these things. And there's a quote here to start from this book, Education with Vision. It says, "There is no shortage of knowledge in this information age. King Solomon was inspired to write in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 12, of making many books, there is no end." Books are those things with paper and the nobody reads books
People
anymore.
Might have forgotten. By
yeah,
now.
They read them online. And the quote continues, "And if that was true 3,000 years ago, what about now? We are living in the midst of an incredible knowledge explosion." No doubt about that, right? I mean, you can get information about anything anytime you want it.
And about well over 99% of it is a total waste of time. So that's why it's just difficult today to sift through just all of this information, so much of it being worthless, just to find that golden nugget of something of value.
Yeah, and a lot of, well, we live in the age of fake news, right? So is it true? There's a lot of things out there that you can find, but is it true or not? Just a couple of statistics related to that. This is from Mobile Business Insights. A few stats to demonstrate the power of the portable devices, because I think that's what everybody's really getting their information on in most cases, portable devices. And people listen to KPCG on their portable device. That's a good use.
That's like maybe one of the only good uses.
They say a staggering 1.4 billion smartphones were sold in 2015. This is when the statistics are from, so you can imagine today what it would be. I think I've bought two since then. They say there's a lot of people that have the high-speed 4G mobile internet connections. About 1 billion connections were made just in that year. They think it's going to be 2.6 billion people. Of course, years ago, not that long ago, if you wanted to get on the internet, you'd have to dial it up and it'd take a while. Now, they're going to take you to a website before you even finish typing in the they know where you're going. So people are really getting on, of course, these fast networks. There's more than 3 billion people worldwide now using the internet, according to Time, and 80% of them access it from smartphones. Kids are doing that at school. You see kids all the time. I don't know what the policies are at a lot of schools. I know here at Imperial Academy, they're not allowed in the classrooms and so forth, which I think is a great rule because there's a lot of bad information on those, and it's very distracting.
It is. I mean, that's something I always saw at public school. There were some kids who were just expert at texting under the desk. They could not even look down at the phone and send exactly the message they were trying to send, and the teacher would have no idea what was going on. I can't really think of too many good reasons to have one of those in the classroom. I occasionally would take a couple of notes on my phone when I had one like that, but there's too many distractions. Even if you're not doing something wrong, there's the temptation to pull up something else during the class.
For sure. you might think about yourself with this. I'm thinking about myself. The average consumer checks his or her smartphone 46 times a day.
Oh.
And that's probably low. I mean, because that would be the average. So, and that's in the U.S. People do this a collective 8 billion times every 24 hours just in the U.S. More than 50% of people immediately pick up and begin using their smartphones after they wake up. That's probably higher than that today. So anyway, those are just a few statistics that are out there. There's a lot more. But again, that just highlights this knowledge explosion. So there's no limit to how much knowledge people are getting their hands on, literally now, I guess. But what's the value in it? That's the point. That's the question.
Yeah, a little over a month ago, I actually downgraded, I say upgraded, to one of those prehistoric flip phones.
Mm-hmm.
And only thing I can do on it is call and text. I can't believe how much time I've saved from that, because really, it does seem like there's an active push to just get people plugged in at all times. You see it in public restaurants where everyone is on their own devices. They're not even looking at the people sitting next to them and across from them. What value does that all have? Are those people reading about important history? Are they studying the Bible on their phone? I don't think that's the majority of the use of those devices.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting point, because a little later, I have a little blurb from an article about one of the main factors in young people or people of any age becoming educated or doing very well with their education is curiosity. And I think I know from my own experience, if you're on a device all the time, it sort of numbs your curiosity, because you're just perusing. I mean, some people, you know, you could look up some things that would be relevant, and I'm not saying that wouldn't be the case, but like you said, in a lot of cases, we're not. I don't think we're studying the great works of Shakespeare on our phones. typically, it's a little more surfacey than that.
Yeah, the easy thing to do is watch a clip on YouTube or watch a show on Netflix or whatever other streaming service there is. That's just a way to constantly be gratified, but not really be searching into the deeper things of life.
Yeah. Continuing, there's another quote here from this Education with Vision books, free at thetrumpet.com. After talking about this knowledge explosion we're in today, it goes back historically and takes a look at something that happened in the Bible. It says Bible history tells us of another knowledge explosion of sorts after the flood, which, of course, a lot of scholars debate that, but we'll take God's word for it. After the flood, many of Noah's descendants gathered in the plains of Mesopotamia. They multiplied greatly and gathered themselves in cities to expedite knowledge production. They built a giant tower, of course. I think everyone knows about that, the Tower of Babel. And this brick skyscraper stretched high above the earth's surface, much like its modern counterparts in many large cities today. And Genesis 11 says, they built the tower to make a name for themselves. It is clearly implied that they did it to defy God. And so that is what the Tower of Babel was about. And so you do have to wonder, when you think about knowledge and the acquisition of knowledge, you know, what about some of the college classes that are being taught today? Or just say that the foundation in general, which would be evolution for the most part. A lot of the modern education is being taught to do really one thing at the end of the day, which is to defy God, to mm-hmm. totally try to wipe him out of the picture. And once you do that, hey, anything goes, right? A red crayon's blue, that guy's a girl. We don't know what's going on, because God's been completely taken out of the classroom.
And it does originate back there at the Tower of Babel, where they try to make a name for themselves. I believe a different translation for that is something like be under their own authority. So they were trying to basically make their own laws and go by that instead of letting God rule them anymore. You can see the results of it today. Mr. Armstrong wrote about it in this article, The Deadly Leaven of Higher Education. It says here, now the scholarly mind of the more highly educated is a natural carnal mind. Therefore, the most important knowledge, the things of God, the spiritual knowledge of why God put humanity on earth, what is the true human potential, what is the way to peace, happiness, abundant well-being, the knowledge of the true values, is utterly unknown to such a mind. These things are foolishness to the scholarly mind. And you can see that in education. They don't care about trying to explain the purpose for mankind being on this earth. Last I checked, that's not really a subject covered in colleges.
Can you imagine if it was? I mean, that class wouldn't last. There'd be protests outside. I am quite sure they would protest it and shut it down immediately.
Well, it's too inspiring. It takes too much study and really getting deep into proving it to understand that. And obviously, it would imply that God exists, which a lot of people don't even agree with that.
Right, and if that's the thing, if you come to that and you say, "Well, okay, I believe God exists," then you have a system of right and wrong, right, that has to be followed. And that's what a lot of people shy away from, modern education in particular, because it undercuts their belief system, which is an evolution basis. There's a little some statistics here. This is from Pew Research. This is looking at college students, and it says, this is just from a few years ago, I guess, 2014, so a few years back. Sources of guidance on right and wrong among college graduates. What do they look at to determine what's right and wrong? These are college graduates. They've been through the university system. What do they look to for guidance on right and wrong? 30% say they do look to religion. Now, they don't go much beyond that. I don't know what that means exactly, but they say they look to religion. So you've got 70% that are going somewhere else. 14% go to philosophy and reason. 41% say common sense. 12% science, and 3% just don't know. At least they admit it. We don't know what we're doing out here. We don't know what's right or wrong.
That is a scary concept to think that 70% don't even have maybe a higher power that they would turn to try to figure out what is right and wrong. I never really thought about that too much before, but if you don't have a religious structure in place, if there isn't an authority telling us what to do, then what's stopping us from doing anything we think of? And those things are not good things. The human mind is naturally tuned into more evil temptations. It's not naturally good. So if we didn't have a being sort of having authority over us, then we would just do whatever we want.
And, you know, it's interesting because religion, well, I don't know, you know, whatever religion people subscribe to, a lot of that is under attack. And also the common sense one. Right. I mean, what would be considered common sense even 15, 20 years ago? Is it still common sense today? Those things have come under attack. And, you know, the Bible talks a lot about that. Like, just things that you would naturally do, people aren't doing those things anymore. And so the whole even just these terms, like, well, I look to common sense. Well, that's different than what it used to be 30 years ago. Because, again, it's coming from your own thinking or society's thinking. It's not coming from the law of God, and that's the difference here. So it is interesting to take a look at that and see what people, and you have to take people's word for it too. You know, I kind of tend to doubt that of the 30% that said they look to religion, that they really do. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to say that, but how much so?
Right.
That's interesting. I don't know what those numbers are, but because there are a lot of stats out there that when people come through colleges, even if they sort of believed in God before, a lot of them don't afterwards.
Yeah, and that's a really good point too. If the scary thing about that is that human thoughts and beliefs tend to evolve a lot based on people trying to influence us. You know, we're very susceptible to peer pressure, for example, or to what society is saying is right. The thing is, if there's right and wrong, those things never change. And so, if our thoughts on right or wrong and wrong are always changing, then at some point during that change, we've been wrong. Most of that time we've been wrong. Hopefully we're changing from wrong to right. But in a lot of cases, as we've seen with our moral decline, we're changing our thoughts from right to wrong. That's a big problem.
Well, even if you think back to that tweet that student made that I read earlier about our, you know, going to our schools, like going to the 1600s because of the dress code. Well, okay. So was it wrong in the 1600s? Is it right now? Like, how do you measure that? I know people tend to think we're progressing, so everything that's new is better than what used to be. However, in a lot of cases, it doesn't pan out that way. Mm-hmm. So even making a comment like that, like, you know, welcome to the 1600s, well, maybe that was better. I don't know. Is that a bad thing? It depends, I guess, on what was happening in the 1600s.
Well, if you look at portraits of royalty back then, I thought they were wearing rather dazzling outfits, and now people dressed like the court jesters that entertained the royalty back then. That's how it is. People smear paint all over their faces. Yeah. They dress like clowns, and that's totally high fashion, apparently.
That's I had never thought of it that way, but that's a really good point. Yeah, the court jester.
Are we really on a higher plane of dress code today than we were back then?
That's a really good point. That's interesting. But this booklet, Education with Vision, gets into a lot of details, and we're kind of going through some of the points today. Hopefully, you'll get the book because it's really interesting if you haven't looked at it before, or even if you have, it's a great reminder of things. But continuing talking about the Tower of Babel and that history. It's written here in the booklet. This got God's attention. They built this tower. They wanted to do things their own way. And it says, and the Eternal came down to see this city and the tower which the children of men built. And the Eternal said, behold, the people is one. They have all one language, and this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. And so they were going to get their knowledge together. And once they did that, they could continue on and on. And so that's very interesting. James Fawcett and Brown commentary interprets the passage this way. They will shrink from nothing, however hard or presumptuous, which they may wish to accomplish, so that the evil already in the world will be fearfully increased. So knowledge increased, but so did the evil, of course. And its diffusion accelerated by this ungodly association, unless means are taken for its immediate dissolution. And so, of course, the languages got confused, because once everybody got together, it's not like they got better and better. They got more knowledge, but it got worse and worse what they were doing with it.
And a big purpose, remember, for the Tower of Babel was to build something so high that God could not flood the earth again and drown them. Apparently, they're going to build a building that will be above the highest flood if they go to the top of it. Just the hubris to think that you could outlast God. They must not have really understood who God is, because they limited greatly how he could have struck them dead if he wanted to.
Sure. Or even like the tower washing away from the bottom. Like, didn't you guys think about it? But anyway. But yeah, I mean, that the whole lesson there is that they said, well, hey, and we see this all the time today. They said, well, we want to do wrong, but we don't want to pay the penalty for doing wrong. So we'll try to figure out a way around it. There's a lot to think about there if you think about modern medicine in some ways, not all of it, of course, but in some cases where it's kind of extreme, or a lot of things, they don't deal with the cause, they're trying to deal with the effect. The class there at that one university about people being overweight, just and trying to, you know, protest people persecuting them, I guess. But what's the cause of being overweight? I mean, it's the bad food production in a lot of cases. They're not looking at the cause, they're trying to solve it on the top end somehow.
Right, and so God had to thwart them back at that time. He had to change all of their languages so that they could not communicate with each other as easily. It was basically a means of delaying the inevitable. Mr. Armstrong wrote about that in Mystery of the Ages. What was it that they had devised to do that he was stopping at that time? Well, you know, traveling to the moon and back, putting satellites out in space, you know, launching nuclear bombs, which once you have that capability, man cannot last for very much longer. So in that time frame, many thousands of years later, we're now able to do a lot of those things. We have means of translating languages, even at live events, so that people from 200 different nations could all be speaking the same thing.
Right.
So clearly, that was only a temporary solution by God, and now we are where we are if the Tower of Babel had not been destroyed way back then. That's what they would have already been doing.
Yeah, and the internet is kind of probably that in a way. Everybody's on it. Everybody can communicate. Everybody can spread messages one way or the other. And this booklet, Education with Vision, points out we are reliving that same history today, like you just mentioned, except that God hasn't intervened yet. The awesome amount of knowledge, it says, that man has produced, especially in the last century, which if you read the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, he talks about that. You know, they start out in the horse and buggy age, and then 100 years later, people are going to the moon shooting off nukes. You know, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal when you think about it. But it says it has not solved the problems of the world, all this knowledge. In fact, our problems have only gotten worse. And that's true across the board. There's some things that are highlighted here. The divorce rates, the sexually transmitted diseases, the murder in the U.S., I guess it's over 20,000 Americans murdered just within our own borders every year.
Wow.
Even though we have a lot of wealth, the poverty rate's 12%+. We just don't have enough knowledge, that's the thought, or the more knowledge has caused more problems, or it hasn't solved them is a better way to say it.
Yeah, it's shocking to think how fast we have come along in the last century or two, just with all of this technology that we have now. basically the whole world, the whole universe is open to us, it would seem like. But when you have that option, a lot of sins are available that we didn't have access to before. And so you see just the breakdown of family and just so much suffering now on a larger scale than we've ever seen before.
Yeah, and even with the family situation, there are more people going to college now, I think, than probably ever in history. But if you look at some of the more recent headlines, a lot more women are going than men. And, I mean, so if they're going through the institutions and getting different classes, some of them will be valuable. Some of them will be more of the progressive variety that probably won't be. I don't think that's going to make for very good relationships down the road, you know, in some of those situations. But it is interesting. I accidentally stumbled into a women's literature class. I thought it was going to be about women writing books, but it turned out to be about not liking men.
Oh.
So I only lasted one day there at the old University of Wisconsin. I dropped that class immediately. And they came in the first day, and I realized there was trouble. And the professor looked at me. It was a woman. She said, "You're brave." And I was looking around. I'm like, wait a second. There's only two guys in there. It was me and a Chinese exchange student. He read his schedule wrong. So I think I might have mentioned that before. So, but anyway, I always think about that when I think of some of these college courses. And I thought, yeah, those girls did not want me in that class. That's for sure.
Right. And they're in a class like that. They're totally being indoctrinated against the role of wife and mother in the home. And that is a sad thing, because we've even talked about how men find those traits a lot more abrasive and less attractive when they think they should be the dominating in the home and things like that. That's just not something that most men are looking for in a lifelong partner. So education is having a big role, even in just flipping the family roles on its head. When you have women who are that educated as well, or just going all out for a career, how could they possibly ever trust a man to lead them in the home, you know, when they're that highly qualified?
Yeah, especially if he doesn't have some similar, you know, knowledge base, I guess. But so it all comes down to this really interesting thing, that there's all this knowledge, it's increasing all the time, we all have access to anything we want on our smartphones, and yet you have all these unhappy, miserable, violent conditions. And I think an honest look at the headlines, I think anybody would have to admit that. It's not everybody and every family, but it's in general, there are problems. And that's the question asked by this booklet, Education and Vision. Why is there this paradox between so much more knowledge, but more problems too? Even if you think about today's headlines, you have North Korea threatening to shoot missiles at Guam. The U.S. is threatening retaliation. And all of this is happening like 70 plus years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. What have we learned in the last 72 years or whatever? Has it helped out? Apparently not.
Yeah, we're on the brink of nuclear destruction once again, on a scale thousands of times worse than back then, because the weapons have advanced so far. Mr. Armstrong had a really chilling point. I believe it was in Mystery of the Ages as well. He said, it takes an educated mind to build a bomb.
Yes, right.
That's a really just chilling point, because we do have incredible education today, but is it in the right things when what they're learning how to do is exterminate all human life from the planet?
Yeah, I think a lot of the scientists involved, even in the development of the atomic bomb, I think at the end of it, they just thought, what did we do? Because that's a power that man cannot handle. Now, a person could say, well, hey, it's been 72 years, or I think it's about 72, and you know, we're still here, so it's okay. Yeah, but we're living under the threat of this constantly. And you've got Iran, you've got North Korea now, all these rogue nations. Don't forget about Europe. They've got weapons. There's a lot in it, China, Russia, you know, a lot of places do. And, you know, do we really think that it will never get used? We'd all like to think that, but, you know, who's comfortable in that sort of a world to where, you know, at any moment things like that could happen? And again, that's that big paradox that's written about here in Education with Vision, to where, yeah, there's a lot more knowledge. And a lot of it's really great, but a lot of it's not. And then it hasn't solved the problem. So you have to go back and say, okay, so the knowledge isn't coming from the right place. And that's what we get to, is where do you go to find true knowledge that'll solve problems?
Yes, and Mr. Armstrong wrote a lot about that, how he he always said he wasn't in the college business, and yet he ended up establishing three great college campuses, Ambassador College. And he did have this write-up in the Ambassador College annual catalog. It does bring out a lot of the problems in most colleges. He said, we certainly don't need another college like the rest. We need something that's vastly different. And here's what the college manual says. It is generally recognized by educators that dangerous evils have leavened the educational system. Curricula generally have become wholly materialistic. Demands in scientific, technological, industrial, commercial, and professional fields have put the emphasis on the purely technical and intellectual at sacrifice of spiritual, moral, and cultural development, on curriculum rather than on character, on earning a living at the neglect of learning how to live. And here's even just a way that the students on the campus in their everyday lives suffer. Universities have grown so large, students lose their identity, moving along a huge academic conveyor belt. Personality development is sacrificed. Personal contact between student and instructor becomes non-existent. The most essential knowledge is the purpose and meaning of life, the true values as distinguished from the false, and the way to peace, happiness, and abundant well-being. But this basic and most important dimension in education is entirely missing from traditional curricula.
Yeah, he wrote a lot about that over the years, that paradox in knowledge. And in Mystery of the Ages, he said, too, the billions now living on Earth not only are ignorant of the most important knowledge, who and what is God, they seem not to want to know, which is true. Says they are willingly in ignorance of this most important knowledge and relationship possible in human life. And, I mean, those stats from earlier showed that 70% at least of college graduates look somewhere else for right or wrong. They don't look to religion. And I imagine those numbers have changed. And back to this book, Education with a Vision, it says, man has acquired enormous amounts of knowledge, but he has rejected the knowledge that is most important, the revelation of who and what is God and what is his purpose for man. That is why God views the wise of this world as fools. And gives a few references there, Psalm 14:1 and 1 Corinthians 3:9. And you would have to say that. I mean, the people that are on the forefront of some of the, like, especially the social change, is that wisdom or is it foolish? Like, we don't even know, you know, what the gender of somebody is anymore. Is that giving people hope and a vision for the future? You know, I don't think so. You don't see that out there in society.
That's true. I mean, especially when you consider almost a 40% suicide rate among transgenders, and yet people are actively pushing for that to be glamorized and glorified so that more people make that choice in life. That's not hopeful at all. That's the exact opposite. It leads to life ending, not lasting forever. It's just the total opposite of what God would want.
Yeah, and I think, but then what happens on the backside of where, say, bad statistics would come out about whatever it might be, then they're looking for another reason. Well, it must be because people aren't accepting of whatever. You know, they're looking at the numbers, but they're not getting back to the actual cause, which is they're just ignoring revealed knowledge. Is it possible? You know, that's the question. Is it possible that the Bible is true, that God did write some things down that man doesn't know unless he gets it from there? Right? That's the question people have to ask themselves. Is it possible that that's the case? And that ties into this right up here from The Atlantic. Yeah, just talking about education, it's the schools are missing what matters about learning. And they say curiosity is underemphasized in the classroom. So I would ask, well, what about being curious about what God's revealed? Why not take a look at it at least? And then compare it like Herbert W. Armstrong did. Look at evolution, look at religion, or, you know, God's word in the Bible, and see for yourself. Take a look, see at it.
That's a really good way to start as well. If you have evolution versus creation, that's the question of origins. How did life even spring up in the first place? Once you prove that there is a God, it only makes sense that he would provide an instruction manual like Mr. Armstrong often wrote about for human beings. If you think about it on a very practical level, if you buy a toaster and you ignore the instruction manual saying don't get water on the electrical outlet, and then you just think, oh, I can plug this in even if it's wet, that leads to catastrophe.
And it's a shocking discovery. Yes.
It's a shocking discovery, exactly. And yet what we do as human beings is we think we can do everything the opposite of what our instruction manual, the Bible, says.
Yeah, I think that's just a really good point that this Atlantic brings out here about, you know, being curious, taking a look at some things. They say the power of curiosity to contribute not only to high achievement but also to a fulfilling existence cannot be emphasized enough. Curiosity can be defined as the recognition, pursuit, and intense desire to explore challenging and uncertain events. Well, there's a lot of things in life that I think, if people are honest, we're not really certain about. We don't know. You know, there's a theory, there's a thought, there's an idea, somebody else said it, it's the popular thought. But do we really know? Either side of a question, you know, whether it be about God and his word or about what would be taught at a university, like, do we know? And the people that really do well have a certain curiosity to find out. And that's sort of the challenge that's being, you know, posed here. Like, say, if you get this book, Education with Vision, and you look at it, why not take a look-see and challenge yourself and say, well, I'm at least curious to find out, you know, and then prove it right, prove it wrong, but at least take a look.
Anyone who goes outside at night and looks up at the stars knows there has to be more out there. Even just thinking about it logically for a few minutes, how could it be possible that all of these different factors, even here on this earth, could come into the exact right combination to support life like this? Why have we not seen life out there except for maybe a water droplet on a planet billions and billions of miles away from us? We haven't seen anything else out in the universe like that. There's no way that all of these different factors could come into place without a God doing it. And that's just one way where we understand that there has to be more than just the material realm, even though education just completely confines all knowledge to the physical. There has to be a material realm. There's even a human spirit in our minds. And so there's so much more to life than just what we see right here on this earth.
Yeah, it's Jeremiah Jacques has a sun ulcerosis program about, and it's airing today, about the eclipse that's coming here. It's just in a few weeks. And, you know, very exciting. People are very excited about that. And it's kind of interesting because you think, well, how do these amazing things happen? Like, well, you know, why do they happen? And if you look back at years ago, what people thought, they had some crazy thoughts about it. You know, I forget what one of them was. Like, they thought there was some monster chasing the sun. I mean, right. You know, people had crazy ideas. But at the time, you know, if you were in that village, I guess, and people, that was a common thought, well, that's what's happening. You said, well, actually, I think it's, and you knew what happened. People wouldn't believe you. They'd laugh at you because it wasn't the common thought. Why would it be any different today with any topic? Just because it's the common thought, does that mean it's right? Well, it hasn't proven that way historically with a lot of things, and I don't think it would be any different today.
How often would you guess that the common thought is wrong today? It's probably above 90%. So to think that just because we believe what everyone else believes without ever proving it for ourselves, without ever thinking about it for more than a minute or two, that just is not realistic at all.
Yeah, that's a point here just about being curious and looking into things, again, just from this right up here from the Atlantic. They say that in recent years, curiosity has been linked to happiness, creativity, satisfying intimate relationships, increased personal growth after traumatic experiences, and increased meaning in life. In the school context, conceptualized as a character strength, curiosity has also received heightened research attention. They say having a hungry mind has been shown to be a core determining factor of academic achievement, rivaling the predictive power of the IQ. So, you know, people say, well, how smart is somebody? Well, what's their IQ? Well, they say, you know, a lot of it has to do with how curious they are. And the question is, you know, are people going to be curious to look into, say, what God says and then compare it to, you know, what the other side would say and look into it and find out? That's sort of the challenge that's being brought up here with this book or, you know, any of the literature on the trumpet, but Education with Vision, to take a look if people understand what the origin of education is today. Is it right? Is it wrong? What's true education? What's false? Can we figure that out? That's the question.
Curiosity and challenges often go hand in hand, because if you do have curiosity and you are wondering about the world around us, about the universe, it takes a lot of work. It's a big challenge to prove why these things exist and what the purpose is behind all of it. And I think we all know from experience that challenges are really important just in general to having a productive, happy, fulfilling life, you know, having a challenge like Mr. Armstrong did, where he did a 6 month or so night and day study into creation versus evolution, into the Sabbath and the holy days and these fundamental doctrines of the Bible, something like that. He was just so focused and grounded after a challenge like that. It really did enrich his entire life.
Yeah, it's a rare trait to be that curious and to really find the answer. I think in general, people would say, I don't know. And that's, I guess that's the whole thought behind an agnostic, right? I don't know. Who knows? Type of thing.
And yet people who say that put so much time into proving other things that are far less important. What could be more important than knowing whether God exists and whether he wants us to do anything about it?
Yeah. A couple of just final quotes here from this book, Education with Vision, kind of puts a final wrapping on this topic, at least as far as we can cover today. There's a lot more in the book, of course. But it says, concerning education's role in rejecting God's knowledge, Mr. Armstrong wrote, little or nothing is taught about God. But even in the elementary grades, the basic concept, the approach to knowledge is evolution. And I think everyone knows that. He says, is it any wonder then that the scholarly do not know who and what God is? They believe what they have been taught, which is common. You know, if we're taught something, we tend to just believe it. And it says, man's system of education with its vast accumulation of knowledge at best is incomplete. So it's not that it's all wrong, the knowledge that man has, but some of it is, and it is incomplete. They write here, it's like a massive structure built without a foundation. And then it talks about how in the second chapter of the book, they look at the right foundation on which education should be built. And Mr. Armstrong said that God's word, his instruction manual for mankind, is the foundation of all knowledge. He says it's not the sum total of knowledge, it's the foundation, the true premise, the starting point, the concept that directs the approach to the acquisition of further knowledge. You can see that in headlines even today, if they're honest headlines, in the realm of archaeology, a lot of science. They make a new discovery, and it's like, lo and behold. And if you know much about the Bible, you'll say, hey, wait a second, I've read that before. Science is finally caught up with the Bible, or archaeology, you know, it proves out something historically from the Bible. People really try to discredit the Bible with those fields and other fields, but the more you look at it honestly, the more it just proves the Bible right.
And we talked about a couple weeks ago, at least, about the Canaanites and how supposedly they were exterminated by the Israelites, and archaeology proved that false. Even though if they had looked in the Bible for 10 seconds, they would have seen references to the Canaanites many, many, many times after they were supposedly wiped out. So articles like that are very dishonest. People, a lot of the time, they resort to deception to try to disprove the Bible, when the Bible itself says you must try to prove it instead of disproving it, or else you'll never get anywhere.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. It's just, it's the attitude somebody comes at it with, you know. If you go into it with, oh, I'm going to try to find everything wrong that I can, you will, I don't think they won't find anything, but they'll have a negative attitude about it. But if you go into it saying, hey, look, I'm going to try to prove this, if it's right, I'm going to try to prove it right, you know. And few people do that.
And it doesn't mean being biased and
right.
Closing your eyes to any evidence, but really, if you go into it with an open mind, you'll figure out pretty quickly that the Bible has never contradicted itself. It's never been proven wrong. Deeper study will undo all of the supposed contradictions that you find. It's incredible just how so many writers, 40 or so writers of the Bible came together, and yet there's not a single contradiction in the entire book.
Right. And, of course, some people think there are, but those are easily addressed.
You can. Every single one of them, you can prove that they aren't contradictions.
Final couple of paragraphs here from Education with Vision. Free at thetrumpet.com. You should check it out. It says, true education is a lifelong process, which, Grant, for you and me means we have to keep, I guess, learning stuff. I graduated, but it's a lifelong process. It's about realizing your incredible human potential, and that cannot be accomplished in school or in college alone. But with God's vision as a foundation, those few years of college can certainly serve as a springboard for greater success and happiness in life. And then they say, Herbert W. Armstrong College, which is where we're broadcasting from, is but a small foretaste of what colleges will be like in the world tomorrow. It's not like other colleges and universities today. Those institutions suffocating under the increasing pressure of gross materialism, godless science and politically correct nonsense. And we had just a couple headlines at the beginning that prove that out. And there are a lot more headlines like that. Herbert W. Armstrong College's uniqueness is best summed up by the school motto, Education with Vision, which is where the title of this booklet we've been talking about today comes from. Education with Vision. School year starting again. It's a great time to get that out and look at it. And if you've never looked at it before, take a look at it. There's a lot more than we could cover today, but it does go through the origins of the modern education through Germany and through some of that history, and then has a really great look at the end of it about the education you want to get. So it's not, yeah, there's negatives if you look at, say, some of the educational problems in the world, but there's a lot of positive on the other side.
And it does, at least to me, the most inspiring part of that booklet is just how education never stops. For many years, I just thought, well, you go through K-12, then you go through 4 years of college, and it's over, and I can just do whatever I want.
Watch TV.
I can relax. Yeah, but it's incredible just from experience. We learn that, well, there's still a lot of great books to read. There's still a lot of wonderful topics to study. It never does stop. You learn from experience, travel, personal contacts. Mr. Armstrong had a whole list of things where you can basically learn from the world around you every single day.
And, of course, one of the big fears today is Alzheimer's disease. And more studies show that if people stay active and engaged mentally, it helps fight against that. You know, it's like a muscle, you know, right? Your mind. If you use it, it can stay pretty strong. If you don't, it just goes into la-la land.
Yeah, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right. And so anyway, that's the book is Education with Vision. You can check that out at thetrumpet.com. It's free. All of it there is free. You can read it online if you'd like to. You can read it on your phone if you want to, on your smart device. Or getting a copy is a great way to do it too. That's free. And then you can write in it.
I like that.
Highlight your points you like. You can doodle a little bit.
Physical paper doesn't wear out the eyes.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of studies about that too, how it just your brain processes it better. We don't totally understand all that yet, but they're finding more and more out about that. So that's Education with Vision. It's at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program. Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming up. Also, The Sun Also Rises today for myself, Grant Turgeon, or for Grant Turgeon and myself. I'm Dwight Falk. You're Grant Turgeon. We'll see you tomorrow. I think it should be done. You're listening to Trumpet Radio.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.